my God. All right, today is March the 10th, 2009, and we're in the home of Ruby Nell Wilson, and this is Patricia Eden Cope, mm-hmm. who's my cousin, and I call her Dee. So, Dee, we just want to record some stuff for family history. So, tell me, let's start all the way back at the beginning. Tell me when you were born and where.
I was born in McKinney, Texas, March the 13th, 1936. And my mother and father had a rented room and a house, and I don't remember the street. He drove an RC Cola truck, and she was a housewife.
Okay. What were their names?
Oh, her name was Ina Faye Harlan, and his name was Robert Reese Edens.
Okay. And let's see, you didn't have any brothers or sisters?
No, but my mother and father divorced when I was young. They actually separated when I was 18 months old, and I went to live with my mother's parents, Jess Harlan and Beulah Harlan, although she was my step-grandmother, because my own grandmother had passed away. When I was about 18 months old, I don't know where my father went, but he left, and so my mother wanted me to go and live with a friend, and it was Pauline and Vernon Lusk, a couple that she knew. They didn't have any children, but my grandfather, my mother's father, he resented that. He didn't like that idea, and so he intervened and he took me home to live with them. And then I think when I was about 6 or 7, my parents actually got a divorce, and I have the divorce papers. And he was supposed to pay a little bit of money in child support, not much. I think it was $1 a week, which he never paid and refused to pay. And so he moved. He was in the service when I was young. He was in the medical corps. He drove an ambulance. And then after the service, he moved to Nebraska, and he got remarried. And he did have 2 children by his second wife. And his second wife died in childbirth. And so I'm not familiar with with those children. I don't know anything about them, those 2 girls.
Did you ever see him very much?
Yes. No, not very much. But I did see him from time to time. Now, when we lived at Bloomdale, before we moved to Princeton and before we came to Coppell, when we were at Bloomdale, he drove the bus, and for a while, when I was born, he was driving the bus. Mm-hmm. And then after that, he drove an RC Cola truck, or he drove some soft drink truck. And he would come out and bring cartons of drinks, you know, off of that truck. And then I don't remember seeing him, but I know from stories that Aunt Nell tells that he did come around. My mother didn't. When we moved to Princeton, I remember she came and visited once and bought school supplies when I was going into the first grade. I don't remember seeing him anymore until I was in high school. Maybe I was about in the 8th grade. When we moved to McKinney, he showed up, and he came and asked him if I could go with him for the day from school, and we went downtown McKinney, and I didn't see him anymore until I was working in Dallas when I was about, I guess I was about 20 years old. He came to work where I worked and asked my boss if we could step outside and talk for a little bit. And I do remember that I was very belligerent to him. I did not like what he said. I remember that we parted on a very unfriendly note. And let's see. Then he showed up again when I was married, living in Orange and expecting my first child. It was about the month of May, and she was born in July, so I was at home, and he called and said he was coming through the town, and he wanted to stop, and he did. And he told me that he was living in Grand Island, Nebraska, and about his family, and that he owned a line of beauty shops and dealt in beauty products, sold beauty products. And then I never did see him anymore. And my mother was the same way. She would show up from time to time. And when we moved to when we moved here to Grand Prairie, well, she wrote letters in Orange that she was going to come and she was going to come and live with us when the children were small. And I answered and said, no, that's not an option. And then when we moved to Grand Prairie, she got a friend of hers, Vernon and Pauline, her good friend, to bring her to our house. We hadn't been living in Grand Prairie very long, and I didn't know she was coming. They didn't give me any warning, or I would have said no. But anyway, she showed up, and she said she was moving to Mexico, and that her health was bad, and so she tried to get friendly with the girls, but they wouldn't go there. They went to their room and shut the door. And so I don't recall seeing her anymore after that. I got letters from her, but then I don't recall seeing her anymore after that.
She moved to Mexico?
She went, and it didn't work out. She went to live with, she was persuaded to go there by the Catholic Church. And so she evidently lived with some nuns at some place there, but it didn't work out. She thought they were going to take care of her arthritis. You know, she had rheumatoid arthritis. But then we found out that she did come back, and she moved back to Colorado. She was living most of the time in Colorado.
Colorado Springs, as I remember.
Uh-huh.
And that's where she died, wasn't it?
Uh-huh. Yeah. In a home.
Mm-hmm. Since she died.
Pardon?
How long has that been?
Well,
you know, it's been a long time.
It has.
She's buried in wrestling.
Yeah. Right. I can't remember.
I mean, now going back to when you were born and when you, at 18 months, when your parents separated, you went to live with Mimi and Granddad.
Uh huh.
Now, where were they living then?
Bloomdale.
They were living at Bloomdale.
Mm-hmm. And then you moved to?
To Princeton.
Princeton.
And he, Dad worked a farm. He was sharecropped until we moved to McKinney, but he worked a farm in Princeton, and it wasn't real large, not as big as the one here. And I remember that we had the washing machine. She had a wringer washer, and it was outside, and she'd wash, and then I'd get on the porch, and I'd get in the tubs, you know, it was in the summertime to get cool. And then I remember that I don't know if it was James or somebody was sick, and real bad sick with something, and they wanted to keep everybody separated from him, you know, when he was ill. And then I don't remember. It was one of them, those two boys. I went to first grade there, and we rode the bus. James and I rode the bus together, as a matter of fact, even though he's 6 years older than I am. But I had to wear long stockings, you know, to keep warm, because you girls didn't wear pants. And in the winter, it was so, so cold, you know, and you'd wrap up, get all wrapped up. But I hated long socks, and so when I'd get to school, I'd push them down because I didn't like the way they looked. And in the pictures, you'll see.
Did you go to school?
At Princeton.
Princeton,
uh-huh.
Yeah.
So and you went to Princeton first grade?
First grade only.
And then you moved?
Uh-huh, here.
To Coppell.
Uh-huh.
So you were in the second grade at Coppell.
Uh-huh. And I don't remember the teachers. I do remember Mr. Hand, but he wasn't my second grade teacher. I was older. And he was a minister, probably not qualified to teach school, but who cares?
Yeah.
And he had two boys, and they were in school with us. The school was small. You know, the groups were small. Mm-hmm. And my grandmother worked in the cafeteria for just a short period of time. She didn't work very long. And then
Can you remember what year it was she worked in a cafeteria?
I can't.
Or what grade in school you were?
I don't remember.
Yeah. Well, tell us, okay, now that you, so you moved to Coppell when you were about, what, seven?
Seven, 1943.
1943 you moved here.
Uh-huh.
Which is helpful to know because I thought that my grandparents lived here a lot less.
No.
Fewer years than I thought they did. Mm. But they moved here in 43 with you, and living with you then was James.
Yes.
And anybody else?
No.
So it was just the four of you.
Right. But from time to time, there were others, like when Johnny got out of service, mm-hmm. he came and stayed. Aunt Nell stayed a little bit, but she went and worked in Dallas and had a room in Dallas, and I would ride the bus. They would take me to Grapevine and get on the bus, and she would meet the bus, and I would spend the night with her and come home the next day. And I want to tell you something funny about Grapevine. When I was growing up, I thought the name of Grapevine was Up Grapevine. Because everybody in the family, especially Aunt Nell, everybody said, where are you going? We're going up Grapevine.
Okay.
And so I thought that was the name of the town. And you never said Grapevine without that up in front of it. So we went to church and up Grapevine, you know. And we went to the laundromat up Grapevine.
Okay, so tell me. Anything you can remember about Coppell Schools?
The school?
Yeah, well, it looked like it was across the street, almost.
Uh-huh.
Almost across the street. It was actually across the street and a little bit east
right.
Of you on that road.
Isn't the current building of the red brick, isn't that the original site?
The left side of it, yes.
The left side of it, uh-huh. Yeah. Right, that brick building on the left,
right.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
It was small. The building was small, and the cafeteria was on the east side, and the rooms were on the west side.
Now, was the cafeteria actually in the building?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So how many rooms, classrooms were there?
I don't remember, but I know that when we moved to McKinney, I had started the first year of the seventh grade. And they moved up there on that to that farm in December. And so the midterm was like in January, maybe the second or third week of January. There were a couple of weeks, maybe 3 weeks there, that I needed to stay, and I stayed with Aunt Nell, and you were a baby. And when that term changed, then I went and stayed with them. So
you lived in McKinney from 1943. Right?
Here?
In Coppell.
Coppell, uh-huh.
You lived in Coppell from 1943
to... You would have been 1 year old in February.
So 1948.
Uh-huh.
Because I was born in 47.
Seven, right.
So you moved, and Mimi and Granddad moved away uh-huh. from Coppell in what month of 1948? In December of 1948?
In December of 47.
Of 47,
mm-hmm.
okay, 1947.
And I went January of 48.
Mm-hmm. You went to McKinney with them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now the school. So the cafeteria was on the east side.
Uh-huh.
And there were classrooms. Okay, now when you walked up to the front of the building, because here's the thing. We have pictures. I should have brought these, but we have pictures when the school burned
uh-huh.
in 1949.
Oh.
Which is after you left.
Uh-huh.
We have pictures of it. Most of it was brick.
Right.
A lot of it stayed after it burned. And they rebuilt it with looking very much the same way. Because when I started school, it looked the way it did when they rebuilt it.
Uh-huh.
So the front of it, when you were walking from the road to the front of the building, there was an entrance there.
Uh-huh.
And it was, the thing was red brick.
Uh-huh.
Right? And we've seen a picture that had a plaque on it that said, like, above it or something.
Uh-huh.
Coppell School, 1928 or something like that. The original building.
Uh-huh.
You don't remember anything about that?
I don't. Uh-uh. It seems like it had double doors.
Mm-hmm.
And when you went in, I don't know where the main office was. I know they had one,
uh-huh.
but I can't remember where. But I know that when I was in the seventh grade with Mr. Hand, the rooms were on the left. going west. Those older kids were on the left. So I guess that the younger grades were down there close to the cafeteria. Yeah. You know, I'm
when it was rebuilt, there was no cafeteria in it.
Oh, there wasn't?
The cafeteria, the lunchroom, was out back in a separate building when I went to school. When the building was rebuilt in 49,
uh-huh.
It was all classrooms except for an auditorium. Now, do you remember an auditorium when you went there?
Yes. Seems like when you went in the front door, okay, you're right. I think that auditorium was straight ahead, but it was long like this. It was rectangular like that, because the stage was on the east
side.
Uh-huh, and it was long, because I know we went in there a lot, the kids did, you know, and they had programs in there. We had different things.
Well, I know, based on since so much of it was brick and concrete, we assume that when they rebuilt it, a lot of it stayed the same.
Uh-huh.
As it was originally. Like the front and the windows seemed to stay the same.
Uh-huh.
The auditorium, when I started school, there was an auditorium in it. And the stage was on the east side.
Uh-huh.
We have a picture that Barbara and Richard Lee have.
Oh, yeah.
They went through the eighth grade there and had a little graduation ceremony.
Uh-huh.
And they have a picture of them on the stage. And it looked almost exactly like it did when I was in school, which is after they rebuilt it.
Uh-huh.
And the first and second grade rooms were the most east rooms.
Uh-huh.
And there was an entrance down there on that.
Yes, there was. You know, now that you say that the cafeteria or the lunchroom was outside, I don't remember it being outside. I remember that you could come in on that east wing there, that east side, and it seems like the cafeteria was right on the right.
On the right. Well, they could have been.
But
when they rebuilt,
they
evidently needed more classrooms.
Of course, right.
There were only about, I can count them, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, there were only 6 classrooms in that building, plus the auditorium.
Uh-huh.
When I went to school there. So, and the office, the so-called office, was all the way on the west end.
Uh-huh.
It was a little tiny place all the way on the west end.
See, I don't remember the office.
It didn't even have a door that went outside. It had a window.
Uh-huh.
But there wasn't much need of an office in those days.
No.
Your principal probably even taught school, didn't he?
Yeah. Well, was Mr. Hand the principal?
Not when I started. Well, as far as I remember, he wasn't.
Uh-huh.
But we have pictures of, and Barbara Lee remembers Hand.
Uh-huh.
He was the Baptist preacher.
Right.
And everybody knew him.
Yeah.
Very well respected.
Yes.
Okay, so what about other things about the school building that you remember?
Well, around the back, we played, you know, out back, which would have been on the north side of the building.
Right.
And up close to the building, there were a lot of chinaberry trees and a lot of trees and shrubs.
Mm-hmm.
And no grass, it was just dirt. But we would get back there, the girls would, because the boys went and played ball or something. But we would get out there at recess and just kind of play and hang around in the trees.
Uh-huh.
But I don't remember, other than the layout of it, I don't remember anything else being out there. I know on we had meetings of, like the 4-H had meetings, and we went to the fair on the bus, the school, the ones that were in that group, we went to the fair. Let me think. I don't remember any other meetings. I know I was in that group, but I don't know about any other, you know, extracurricular activities.
And you don't remember any other buildings outside the school?
I don't.
I think any that were there were probably built later.
Uh-huh.
After 49. Think about the closest houses to the school.
Well, that one that Addie, let's see, on the west side, I think that next house would have been Addie's. And then next to her was a house that set way back from the road. And it had there was a lady that lived there, a single lady. And then on down, there were some other houses kind of in a low part.
Mm-hmm. You're talking about west of the school.
West. Uh-huh.
Before you get to the bridge.
Before you get to the bridge, there was, yeah, three or four along there, kind of set back. Now, Eddie's was up closer to the road, but those old ones, and it was a newer little house, but those others were older, and they set back off the road. And then as you crossed the bridge and came up, on the left was that Plumley house.
Yeah.
They lived on the left.
It was a big old house.
Uh-huh. And on the right.
Kind of far off the road.
Yes.
I think that's where Lisa Peters' parents lived when I was growing up. It was kind of off in the fields.
Uh-huh, it was.
And it was right about where you turned right.
Yes, uh-huh, it was.
And Miss Patrick's house. Mm-hmm. Don't remember Miss Patrick's house.
Patrick's, is that name?
Yeah, that was across the street. And,
On this corner over here?
Well, if you were turning left would be
the
house you talked about.
Uh-huh.
And on the right, right before you got to the railroad.
Yeah.
It was a little tiny house when I was growing up. That Miss Patrick lived in,
uh-huh.
Like a two-room house.
Yes, little bitty thing. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's right.
And I don't know what else was along there. I know that there were houses, and that house that you talked about, Eddie.
Uh-huh.
You said you took piano lessons.
Uh-huh. My mother thought that I was going to be a budding pianist. You know.
Your grandmother, your Mimi.
No, my mother.
I'm fine.
Yeah. She was wrong about a lot of things, and that was one of them.
But she took piano lessons.
Yes, somehow she persuaded Addie to, I think she paid her a few dollars in the beginning, but you know, after that. Yeah, she probably had to. Addie was a very quiet, you know, really sweet, quiet.
What was Addie's lesson?
I can't think of it, and I don't know. She was very sweet. Her husband was gone a lot. Of course, as a minister, you know, he was gone quite a bit. And she and I would go over there once a week. And I learned to play Old Angine. And I learned to bring it in the sheaves. Oh, I played that one at the school show. I remember doing that. I was shaking so bad. Probably did not do a good job, but they clapped anyway.
Was this in the auditorium?
In the auditorium. It was a Christmas show, actually, I think. It was a Christmas show. But I'm not real sure. Matter of fact, it might have been more than one show. But I know I did play. Talent was pretty scarce. And so I stepped up to the plate twice.
You did good. Doggone. How old were you, Pat?
I never did learn any more songs, but... those lessons just went by the wayside. They moved, as a matter of fact. You know, they moved. But she was a good neighbor. She's a very quiet, you know, shy kind of person, but a good neighbor. She had a little dog, and I used to play more with the dog than I played the piano.
Well,
yeah.
I think that house was later the house that the Ratliffs lived in. Because I remember the house that was there,
mm-hmm.
and I think that was, and that's who lived there. And then their daughter, Dorothy Ratliff,
uh-huh.
lived a little west of that for a
yes,
while.
Yes, you're right.
Uh-huh.
That's the woman that was single.
Yes,
uh-huh.
Divorced,
that's right, divorced, that's right.
Most unusual in those days.
It was.
She had two daughters,
uh-huh.
Kay and Brenda.
Uh-huh.
And Kay was in my class. And,
you're right, it was Dorothy.
Started in the first grade and graduated.
Really?
And I'm trying to locate her now.
Uh-huh.
I've seen her a couple of times since then, but see, they were always troubled, always having problems.
Really?
Dorothy had married Franklin, and
uh-huh.
they had Kay, and then they divorced, and then she remarried somebody named Seeger.
Uh-huh.
And Kay tried to change her name to Seeger, and we never could figure out if she was a Franklin or a
Seeger. Uh-huh.
And then Dorothy eventually came back probably in the, oh gosh, the 70s and lived there and went to church with Mom and Gay and remarried
uh-huh.
a guy. And I don't know where she is now. I need to try to find her. But anyway, she was here for quite a while. But always a strange, different family.
Uh-huh.
You know, troubled, always
troubled.
Always troubled. And no wonder, because her parents were the Ratliffs and they were just mean as snakes. But a lot of these people, they went to church with the Ratliffs, went to church with, I don't know if they went to church mom and dad or not.
I think they did.
They did it one time later on, but they were always troublemakers.
He did. I don't know if he did or not.
And she was, as I remember, a big, pushy woman.
Yeah.
Like, very much like Ms. Ledbetter, who lived here.
Yeah, right.
Before I go, okay. So we've talked about what the school looked like. Tell me what about your classes. Do you remember anything in particular about them?
I don't. I know I wrote down in my notes that I do not remember having homework. I do remember that it was just one teacher. I remember just one teacher. And the groups were small. But I don't know about the subject matter. You know, I know we didn't have much homework. For one thing, I didn't have anyone at home to help me with it. But I don't remember it being a problem. You know, I made good grades, and I don't remember any problems as far as the lessons were concerned. Now, after we moved to McKinney, and I was not a good student with algebra. And Wheelis, your father, you know, always helped me with the algebra. That was the only thing I ever had a problem with. But, of course, in those lower grades, when I moved to McKinney, you know, in that beginning of the second semester of that year, I didn't have any problem fitting in with the McKinney schools. I do remember that. The teachers were very considerate, and they said, it seems like we're not quite on the same level. We're not on the same subjects, but it's okay. I didn't have any problem in the 7th grade or the 8th grade, mm-hmm. as far as that goes, you know.
It's interesting because both Mama, who went from McKinney, and Dad, said that they were always treated like second-class citizens because they came from the country. Because that was a long time before.
Right.
And also James, who went to Carrollton.
He did.
He didn't go here.
No, he didn't.
He was in the 9th grade when they moved.
Right.
So he went to Carrollton, and he said they treated him awful.
They did.
And as a matter of fact, he pointed out that he was younger. He graduated when he was 16.
Yeah, he did.
And so he couldn't be in any extracurricular activities. Nothing social. He said the girls didn't like him because he was younger. He said Carrollton was not good for him. Mama tells a story of him getting kicked off the bus all the time and having to walk home.
Oh, really?
Because that was James. And he told the story that the bus from Coppell to Carrollton took an hour and 40 minutes every day to get there.
Oh, my
because
goodness.
It had to make the circuit all the way up to Leetot, which is Henry Hines and
Circle.
And then all the way, you know, it picked up everybody in the county. Almost. But if you had been to Coppell, if you had moved, you would have finished the 8th grade and gone to what? Carrollton.
Right.
Okay. Well, that's about it for school. Let's see. So when you moved back to McKinney, it was on that farm that when I was growing up,
right.
I used to. Right there on the sort of the west corner of what's now Central Express.
Right.
Right in there. Okay. And why did Granddad move? Because he lived here then. You lived here from 1943 until 19...
It would have been the 2nd, 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, 7th, 43,
44, 47. So 1944. Okay, and I was born in 47. So does that fit in? I was born in February of 47. And you said...
They moved at Christmas.
And when you stayed with me and... Mom and Dad.
Right. You were a baby.
I was a baby. So you moved after February of 47. You said it was December of 47.
They moved in December, and I went, I think, in January of 48.
Okay. So you lived here until December of 40, or they lived here. December
of 47.
And you stayed three weeks longer.
Until the semester changed.
Because I never could ascertain how long me and Granddad lived in Coppell. And up until a couple of weeks ago, I thought it was only a year. Mama tells the story, because Mama did not move here with them. And she got married in 1942.
I was in the 1st grade, and we lived at Princeton. And they got married, and we have pictures. Well, I think I gave her all the pictures that I had. Somehow I had some from Mom, but they had taken pictures out there by that house in Princeton.
And they lived in a small house out back.
Very small.
But that was it. That was at your dad's parents.
Dad's parents. And they lived there.
They didn't live with us.
In McKinney or out.
Right.
Somewhere.
On that foot road, I think that is.
Yeah, where they lived, I guess, when I was little.
Yes.
On the dairy farm.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay, so they lived there, and then...
He joined the service.
Now, so Gay had not finished college yet.
No.
And he went into the service,
uh-huh.
into the Army, and was stationed stateside,
uh-huh.
and Mama went to be with him.
Mm-hmm.
So they married in 42,
mm-hmm.
and then almost immediately he went into the service?
I think, not too long. Uh-huh.
And so she was gone from 42
uh-huh.
until he went overseas,
uh-huh.
which was...
Now, I don't know that. I don't know.
And whenever it was that he went overseas... She returned
uh-huh.
because she tells a story about writing Mimi.
Yeah.
And Mimi said, we've moved to Coppell.
Right.
And she, Mama didn't know where that was.
Right.
And
yeah.
she came in on the train.
Yeah.
Granddad picked her up in Dallas and brought her to Coppell.
Uh-huh.
She stayed here a little while
uh-huh.
with you guys and then got a room in Dallas and worked
uh-huh.
until Gag came home, which had to be in 45
uh-huh.
when the war was over. And then he finished school.
Uh-huh.
And then,
they lived up for
Fleet,
a while.
Fleet Road.
Uh-huh.
Fleet Road.
Yeah. And I rode my bicycle up there.
And then they lived there. I think I was born there. Or they were living there.
Yeah, you were.
Uh-huh. And about, I was, what, a year old or so? And they moved here.
Mm-hmm.
I can't determine how old I was when they moved here. But
oh, you were younger than a year. Because there's pictures of you in a stroller right out
yeah.
back when they were adding on.
Yeah.
And see, when I was staying with them, you were a baby.
Yeah.
You know, you were maybe walking, maybe not.
Well, I heard one time that I was 6 weeks old when they moved here, but I don't think that's right.
You don't?
I have a copy of the deed to this property.
You do?
If I remember correctly... It wasn't filed until 1948, maybe. But I have an idea that they bought the house in late 1947.
Yeah, they did. It was 47.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if they moved here, bought it and moved here, or whether they moved here and then later bought it. I don't know.
I think they bought it first.
First.
Ledbetter was moving away, and he had only lived here about a year.
Uh-huh.
He built the house and lived here about a year. Then got tired of it and went back to California.
Uh-huh.
So that's all kind of in there. I was going to ask you before I forget.
Uh-huh. Why did we move to McKinney?
Yeah, why did you move to McKinney?
Well, you know, my grandfather was sharecropping,
mm-hmm.
and the owner...
Yeah, the owner was Whittakin.
Whittakin, uh-huh.
You remember his first name?
I don't.
Everybody
I tried.
Him Whittakin.
Whittakin.
I've tried to.
He was a German.
Yeah,
and
he
caused a lot of problems.
In what way did he cause problems?
Well,
all the time?
You know, sharecropping, he got the largest percent of the crops.
Right.
But and I don't know exactly what the formula was, but it was always difficult for, you know, my grandfather to really benefit from it in a big way. We had food and everything, but he really never made a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
I think part of the problem was that my grandfather was not the kind of person who could do financial or could see a long term enough to make the farm produce like it should. I don't think he was a worker, a hard worker and everything, but I don't think I know he never satisfied the Whittakin person at all.
I think the Whittakin was a real...
He never was happy with what was going on with the farm, and it was a big farm. But my grandfather raised a lot of pigs, and he had pigs and cows. But mainly, the money came from what was produced on the land.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, he had a minimal type of farm equipment, which he had to buy. You know, it was his. So it was difficult with that formula when you're a sharecropper. It was really difficult to even save up enough or to get enough money to get ahead or get new equipment or whatever. It was just not possible. Anyway, he always, the owner would come out and he would have a problem with something, and then he'd go back, and you know, and my grandfather really was troubled. Well, there are actually two things that caused him to be dysfunctional perhaps. One was the farm, trying to get it to produce and to get ahead, and the other was James. He was into trouble as a teenager. He was a big problem. He would come home and he was drinking, and he was running around with other boys who were doing things they shouldn't have been doing. And for a while, they built a little cabin up here in the park, and they'd go and stay in that cabin, you know, all night and do things. But anyway, he was a problem. He was a real problem. And they would get into, you know, big disagreements, big arguments. But, you know, Mom became, you know, she had a nervous breakdown, probably from the stress, you know, and then she went into the sanitarium in Dallas for a little while and then came back. And when that happened, things kind of just, you know, fell apart, really. And my grandfather found, I guess through friends, people that he knew in McKinney, he found this farm somehow that was up for sale. And it was the local jailer that owned it and lived on it, and it was 40 acres. So it wasn't a big responsibility, but at least he had control over it. And so he decided, you know, to move there. And there, it was just me. You know, their other children were grown and gone. And so but it was difficult for him to do it alone, even with 40 acres. So I know that at the time, the government, they were giving allocations for terracing. And so he went and applied, and he got X number of dollars to terrace the land. And then he had pigs, and he had cows, and he had a couple of sheep. Mainly he sold the pigs, you know, we had milk and, of course, a big garden and a big orchard. We had a cellar, and, you know, it was a little bit better situation than over here at Coppell. It was smaller, and they had more control of what they could do.
Whittington was a
terrorist. Yeah. And so, and then Johnny was in the service at the time. Wheelis was not, but Johnny was. Now, Wheelis and Aunt Nell would come over on the weekends and help with things, you know, things that needed to be done. but Johnny, of course, then retired from the service, and he would come around. I know when they bought the place, they borrowed money from Johnny to do it. And I don't remember exactly how much, but it wasn't a lot. But my grandfather had a fairly new Chevrolet car, and it was red. And he traded that in with that. He gave that to the owner plus his X number of dollars from Johnny. And then he paid Johnny back, although Johnny's wife said he didn't, but Aunt Nell says they did. And... So there was another little problem there. But anyway, my grandfather never paid much on the note. He paid the interest and probably the taxes, but he never had really enough money to pay on the mortgage, you know. But then the highway department came through, and they, at the time that they took the land, I think he had 16 acres left, but they paid off, you know. And he had enough to pay for it, but there was about 16 acres left, which was orchard and outbuildings and what the house sat on. That's what was left.
Well, let's see. And so you graduated from McKinney High School.
Uh-huh.
In what year?
1954.
54. Okay. And let's see. Let's go back to James and Granddad and Mimi.
Uh-huh.
I had forgotten that story about her going into a sanitarium.
Yeah. Let me tell you what happened. Now I'm going to confess that some of this I can't remember really, really well.
Well, you're doing good.
You think so? The older I get, the worse, you know. I'm going to tell you why I have trouble remembering it. The family absolutely pulled the curtain down around that information. And so I never got anything from her. I never got anything from Mom. I only know what happened the day that she became ill. And then I do have pictures of Dub and us. I couldn't find them. I don't know if I gave them to you now. But when she went in the sanitarium, it was in Oak Lawn, we went down there. You were a baby. And we took pictures around some monument, like Robert E. Lee or something. And I don't know where those pictures are, but my grandfather was, what you might say, so frustrated. I'm sure he was very, very stressed. And so he took out a lot of his anxiety and his angst on her. And on me, too, occasionally. I had some chores that I had to do, and if I didn't do them, you know, there were a couple of times that he got really physical with me, and he was very physical with her. She would have bruises, you know, and where he was being carried. Now, James interceded, and he and James, of course, would go round and round over this problem, but Dad was extremely frustrated. He was very stressed. This is a man who had had prior stress in his life. You know, he had lost his wife. He was left with three children. He had run a store. He had a brother that came that had a nervous breakdown. They tried to survive, and it became very stressful. So this time around, with the landlord and the money problems and the son that was a problem, you roll all that up together, and it was, he needed help. You know, he really did, but there was no help there. But anyway, she she was in the kitchen, and I just, you know, I remember just kind of playing around the house, you know, in the summer, just going in and out. I had some chores to do. I had to water, and I had to feed the chickens, and I had to shell corn. We had a corn sheller, you know, and I'd have to do that during the day. But I was in and out of the house. But I walked in the kitchen, and she turned around from the sink, and she had a butcher knife in her hand. And she turned around to me, and she says, "I'm going to kill you." And so I didn't understand exactly what was going on, but she had this funny look on her face. And so she walked close to me, and I backed up, and I got to the door. And so I realized that I better take off running. And so your father was out in the field. He was plowing or something with the tractor. And I ran all the way across the yard out into that field. And he stopped the tractor, and I said, "You've got to come to the house." And he did, and he went and got her, and he realized, or he was out there. I don't know if he was on the tractor or what, but I know he was in that field. And he came in, and he got help. Okay, they told me to go to Addie's house and stay, and so they went over there and got Addie, and I went over there. She did not ask me. She asked me what happened, and I said, "Something's wrong with my grandmother." And so they told her, you know, that what I had said, and so she didn't ask me anything else. She just, you know, I stayed with her for a long time, and then I think it was the next day or two. I believe they might have gotten the doctor and had her sedated. But the next day or two, the doctor must have suggested that she hadn't gotten any better, she was not coherent, and that she needed to go, you know, down to Oak Lawn. And so it was like a minimum, you know, sanitarium. It wasn't a very big place, but she didn't have any treatments. What do you call it? Shock treatments. She did not have shock treatments because they refused that. But she stayed for quite a while, and she got better. She got okay. She got normal, you know. When she came home, she was pretty normal. But that was an episode that was never discussed. Nobody ever said another word about it. And of course, you know why. You know, this was a taboo. No. It was not acceptable. And so I never did, you know, I never discussed it with any family member. I never said anything, but everybody knew it.
Yes, I don't think I'd ever heard that story, but maybe.
I'm sure you haven't.
I did, he was too.
Barely, but never heard it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's...
I forgot.
Because it's in Coppell, like tell me your friends that you had in Coppell.
At school, we didn't have, there weren't any associations outside of school, except when you'd have a birthday party. And I went to birthday parties, and one was Frida and something, a sister, Frida and her sister, and I can't remember their names. And then there was a boy named John Johnson, and another girl that would come to the parties. There were three or four, well, actually about four girls and three or four boys, the two hand boys and the Don Plumley and the John Johnson and another little fella. But outside of school, it was, if you didn't go to church and see them, you didn't see them unless you had a birthday party. Mm-hmm. And I would go to theirs, and they would come to mine, and that was about it.
So you remember the Hand brothers,
uh-huh.
who were the sons of the guy who taught school,
uh-huh,
as the principal.
Right, the minister.
And you said Don Plumley, and that's Zelma and Weldon's
uh-huh, son.
Oldest son.
Uh-huh.
And who else?
See, I don't remember Joe.
Johnson, you said.
John Johnson.
John Johnson. And they lived in the community,
uh-huh.
You'd have birthday parties at that house.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And there's pictures, you know, we're out on the front sidewalk, and I don't know exactly the age. I'd have to look at that, get a magnifying glass, see how many candles were on that cake.
Yeah.
Now, my mother came and orchestrated that little party.
Oh, really?
You might know.
Uh-huh.
And maybe two or three parties. I don't, because
probably.
I know, we did have them. And then, let's see, we had, when I was young and living was, let's see, where was, well, I guess she would come and get me sometimes and take me to the park in McKinney, and they'd have a birthday cake, but I didn't see any children. I've got some pictures of me sitting on a bench when I was about four, you know, because at five and six, you know, we were at Princeton. But I don't remember those days. I just remember that we would have a birthday party from time to time. There would be one. And she would.
What about Christmas?
Christmas was not, over here, Christmas was not a real big deal. We had, I don't remember having a tree there, but we very well could have, but I don't remember it. I don't remember ever getting any presents here. I do at McKinney, but I don't here. Now, one of my teachers at Coppell at Christmas gave me she gave all the girls in the class a vase, and it was shaped like a violin, and it was blue. And, of course, it's since disappeared. But the teachers would give you something, you know, at Christmas, some little something, small but, you know, thoughtful. And I don't remember any gifts at the house. I really don't. I know my mother would come from time to time, like at the beginning of the school year, bring some clothes, and then that would be it. I remember I didn't have many shoes. I had a pair of sandals in the summer and a pair of shoes in the winter, but they would wear out. I know I do remember going to church one night, and I had my old sandals on. They were terrible, and I hid my feet under the bench because I didn't want anybody to see my feet.
Tell us about going to church. We went to Grapevine.
Grapevine. Okay. There was no church here in Coppell,
uh-uh.
And so and we really didn't go to Louisville, you know, for any further.
No.
But we always went to Grapevine for groceries and church. And I remember the church. It was a little white building. It wasn't very large. And there were, you know, Dub went.
Yeah.
And they became friends with some other boys that were there.
It was
Denzel and something.
Denzel and...
Was it Myrick? Seems like their name was Myrick. Anyway, they became friends because Dub liked to sing, and they sang, you know, at church. But anyway, I don't remember any friends from the church. I don't remember any children much at the church. Just a lot of adults. Now, we went to visit the Denzel's family. We went to visit them.
Myers.
It was
Myers, wasn't it?
Myers, Denzel Myers.
It was Myers. Yeah,
Denzel,
that was it.
And
Myers. And we visited them. And they lived in town in Grapevine. And they came and visited us from time to time. Now, when Mom would have them over, she would fry chicken, you know, and make corn on the cob and mashed potatoes and fry okra. And because we always had chickens, because she raised a lot of chickens.
Yeah, always.
And pie. But now, the children did not eat first. The children ate last. So all the adults went and ate, and then when that was over, you know, the children could go in there and eat what was left. And I liked the pulley bone. A lot of times it was left, but that was my favorite, you know, piece of the chicken.
Naturally.
Mm-hmm. But I don't remember any small children from the church.
Do you remember where the church was in Grapevine?
You know, I do. I'm not sure it's correct, but in my mind, there is a main street running north and south.
Yeah.
Okay. That church sat...
Not
east.
On the street, didn't it?
Yes.
Yes.
It was white.
But it didn't face Main Street, did it?
No.
You had to turn left on something like Texas Street or, I don't know. But it was east.
It was off that Main Street, but it was back on the east side of that Main Street.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a little white building. But I don't know if, you know, I don't know exactly the street, but I know it, I'm sure it's gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But to me, that's where the location was.
Okay, what were we discussing when we stopped? Meeting in the sanitarium.
Yeah. Well, I want to tell you about farming. My grandfather had to get farmhands out of this area because there weren't any people available around to do the work for the cotton and the corn.
To harvest.
And so he would go to Gilmer in the truck and in the fall, and he would bring them back, and they would live in those houses over there, those outbuildings.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it was over, he would take them back home. You know, we didn't have a phone, and so he would say, I'll come and get you next year, you know, get some other people, you know, line up some people to come and stay. And they would. He made friends with some families that wanted to come and do some short-term work.
Were these black families?
Black, oh yeah. Yeah.
And they lived in Gilmer.
Uh-huh, and they would come. And they, one of them, one couple, she was pregnant when she came, and she went into labor, and Dad went up Grapevine, and he got the doctor and brought him back, and she had her baby. And
gosh,
then,
I've forgotten how much.
And you know what she named it?
No.
Ruby.
Oh.
And they liked that name, you know, because of your mom.
Uh-huh.
And so one of the ladies, she wanted she had a purse. And I think that Mom or Aunt Nell gave her a purse, an old purse. And so the men teased her about this purse. They said, why do you want a purse? You don't have any money to put in. And she said, I don't tote it for the money. I tote it for the style.
And how long would they work?
They would work, cotton would come in August, September, you know. And then the corn, I don't know, it was more in the spring, but... They would be here in the fall and stay until the crops were in, so it was in the fall.
So somewhere around September to November?
Probably. Mm-hmm. October, probably. It's
October.
Now, let's go back and talk about James.
Yeah.
James and this family has a reputation for being the black sheep of the family.
Oh, yes.
And he'll tell you that he won't elaborate much. But
no, he won't elaborate. No.
But he'll tell you some of it.
Yeah.
He did talk about having a cabin.
Yes.
An old shack.
It was in the park.
You said it was in the park. He thought it was down off of Denton Tap. But I may have been wrong. So it was just an old shack that was there. They didn't build
it. It was there, but they probably did some repair work to it. I had been to it once or twice, and it was within walking distance. I think it was near the railroad. You know how the railroad went through the park?
Uh-huh.
It was north of the railroad. But because I remember walking the railroad tracks, and probably with him, you know, because they didn't want us to get too close to the railroad.
Yeah.
But he and some boys, and I don't know who those boys were. They were kids his age and older, and he ran around with them, and they would spend the night over there, drink, you know. He really wasn't much of a drinker, though. He wouldn't come home, fall down drunk.
I remember one story he told. He said Aunt Dude would come out to visit, always in a different car.
Yes.
And that one time, she sent him out to get something out of the trunk.
Yeah.
He was about 12.
Yeah.
And when he opened it up, there were 3 cases of liquor in the trunk.
Yeah.
And he stole one of the bottles.
Oh, he did. Uh-huh.
And then took it to his friends and showed off. And I don't think he let them drink it.
Uh-huh.
But he drank it.
Oh, he did.
Absolutely drunk. And
uh-huh.
sick. And in that built that,
in that cabin. Uh-huh.
And Granddad and somebody had to go down and carry him out.
Carry him out.
And
uh-huh.
he said he was sick for a week.
Uh-huh.
He said. And he said Granddad never blamed him for that. He blamed Aunt Dude.
Well, Granddad never blamed him for anything.
That's
why he was his partial.
He was his favorite. My favorite phrase was, and this is terrible, crime does pay in this family. That was my favorite phrase. Because no matter what he did, Mom forgave him. Now, he and Dad had a lot of problems. They had it out. They would have it out over things. But in the end, he could do no wrong, and he never did very much right, truthfully.
So he would drink all the time?
No, he didn't drink all the time, no. And he really wasn't an alcoholic or anything. I don't ever recall. I do remember that he would go down there and with his buddies, but I don't remember him coming home drunk or anything, no. Uh-uh.
He was young.
Yeah, he's 6 years older than I.
And he was 16 when he graduated.
Yeah.
So he was fairly young.
Mm-hmm.
Mom always said that he was popular and smart.
Yeah.
He was.
Yeah.
He had a tendency to embellish some of his stories. That was just his nature, you know. He told me once that he rode the train with Eleanor Roosevelt. Now, I'm not sure about that, but he had a lot of, you know, stories that he told. Now, I'll tell you one thing that he did. I had savings bonds. I had some savings bonds that, you know, it took forever to buy those little stamps, you know, for a quarter and put them in the book. But he stole those, and they knew that he did. Mom, you know, they knew that he took it. And also, there were some things that turned up missing at the house. And I can't remember exactly what it was, a watch or something, you know, but he was not above, you know, thieving,
mm-hmm.
and he, you know, wouldn't admit to it, of course, but he stole those, there were like coupon books, you know, that you would do at school. It was kind of a pride thing in your country, and it'd take forever to get one full, you know. But anyway, he was running with the wrong, that's true, he was running with the wrong crowd.
Who was some of his crowd, do you remember?
No.
I've forgotten who.
I don't know who the boys were, but they were out, you know, up to no good.
Yeah. And he had a car at a young age.
Yeah.
Granddad bought him a car, he said when he was 16.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't remember that.
That's when he graduated.
Uh-huh.
When he was 16.
I guess he did. I don't remember the car.
Tell me, since you lived here for a number of years, tell me about, do you remember anything about old downtown Coppell?
You know, I tried to remember what it looked like. I don't remember much of anything about, there was nothing there.
Nothing, no.
There was a post office, but that post office was over here on this road.
Yeah. Post office
wasn't over there until...
It wasn't.
Not like it was always here. Yeah.
Right there.
Mm-hmm. Next to the general store. Yeah.
Oh,
now, there
okay.
was a brick building down there that was first modern that was built, but it wasn't there for more than 3 or 4 years.
Oh. So the
Now, what you're thinking is this.
What?
The first post office was in the general store, which was built in 1887 or something. But then they built a building next door to it.
Uh-huh.
And then that was the building until I was somewhere when I was pretty young. And they moved that little post office, sold it, and moved it down to where Carolyn McCain and Jimmy Harville was my friend. I don't know who. It was actually in the backyard of Carolyn McCain's mother, and they made it as a little outhouse. And it sat there until it fell apart. So that may be what you're
thinking.
That's
what I remember.
That was the post office building. It wasn't the post office.
Wasn't the post office.
And they built another one that was almost exactly like it to replace it. And then the other building that was important, and as a matter of fact, the last post office that was here is still there.
Uh-huh.
It's been converted, but it's still there. The other building that was moved was the old railroad depot, which I want to ask you about. But when I was little, so in the late 40s and 50s, there was a little railroad station depot there at the railroad tracks.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because I can remember with you, as a matter of fact. We walked down there with Blondie. Remember my dog?
Yes!
Blondie?
Yes!
Cocker Spaniel. So how old would I have been? I don't know.
Oh, my God.
Pretty young. And we never kept her on a leash, but we put a, I remember put a rope on her or something, and took her down. We walked down to the railroad, and there was this little railroad station. That's the only one I remember. And I remember it was on the east side. It was open. It had just a sitting area to wait on the train.
Oh.
And we sat down there, and a train came along, because the train didn't stop. And it just barreled through there, and it was just a, you know, a few feet away from you.
Right.
And we sat there, and the noise was tremendous.
I imagine.
And I remember Blondie just went crazy.
Uh-huh.
And I can remember as a kid being, feeling upset that if the rope broke, she'd run right out in that train and kill her. And that's why I remember that
tension.
But anyway, that building was eventually sold by the railroad to Terry Kirkland. Terry Kirkland's mother and father, Laura Kirkland and Bill Kirkland. And they lived up on a chicken farm up here between between here and Grapevine. And they moved it out there, and one side of it was his model trains, and the other side they used to candle eggs. And it stayed there until it fell apart. Of course, eventually the airport bought the land. But that was a historic building. And we know that that little depot replaced the original depot that was there, that had the name Coppell on it. It was Coppell, the railroad, that changed the name
that
to Coppell in 1992. So, anyway, that's the movement of those buildings. But anyway, so you don't remember?
I don't. I remember the tracks and the train coming through all the time and the noise, you know, and I loved to go down there when I was, you know, young and and walk those tracks. Aunt Nell and I used to walk them, too. We'd go down there and walk. The park wasn't much, you know. It was just, it was terrible.
Yeah, it's all grown up. It's private.
Yeah.
From 1945 or so on, it was private land owned by Webb Roberts. But he kept it up for a long time. Now it's the city. You ought to go down there and take it down there.
Well,
it's unbelievable now.
I know. We've been down there. Let's see. How long ago has it been? When your daddy was alive, we went down there and walked down there with Janice.
I guess it was
drove down there, but
it was restored in about 1991 or two, I think.
Really?
Yeah. And so it's we're very proud of it.
Yeah, I bet.
Let me see. Okay, so you don't remember anything else about Coppell. Do you remember anything about if you were, for example, you went to Grapevine a lot, by groceries, you said, what store, anything, do you remember?
Let me think. I know where the bus station was.
Where was it?
the street that runs north and south.
Main Street.
It was on the, it might have been in connection with a drugstore. But I'm not sure. But it was on the west side of that, right downtown. And
probably, I bet it's where Will Hoyt's garage is. Could it have been a garage? There was also a City Drug.
City Drug.
There.
It was somewhere in that area.
Yeah. Yeah.
But see, in those days, they didn't always have a bus station.
Yeah.
They just sold a ticket. The bus pulled up.
And the grocery store, do you remember where?
We went to the grocery stores, but I can't remember the names or anything. I can't remember. But I know we went, because that was all there was.
Yeah.
Was those stores.
So when you were going to go from your home in Cop Hill to Grapevine, do you remember the road?
Yeah. You went right up here and then went west.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, right up
Except
there.
Except we know at some point it didn't go like it does now. It didn't just go west and hit 121 and then go left and go to Grapevine.
Right.
That it went back to the railroad track and wandered back under there. As a matter of fact, that was named Cop Hill Road. And in the 30s, I have a map of Grapevine that shows that what is now East Wall Street was labeled Cop Hill Road because that's where you went to Cop Hill. And you went from Main Street, you went east on it. But then it took a turn and went to the railroad track, followed the railroad track for a while, and then came back north and hit our road.
Our road,
In. So it made a jog there.
I never
knew about until I saw maps and things. So evidently, in the late 40s, you were already probably going on the new road.
Probably so.
I
don't remember it winding around. I remember we went right up here and went,
straight in.
At one point, it was right after Ramel Willis moved here. I guess you were a baby then, too. It might have been before you were born. No, I don't know. I'm sure they were living here. They didn't have a washer and dryer. Mom had a washer, but no dryer, we hung it on the line. But Wheelis Room now wanted us to go to Grapevine to the laundromat.
Mm-hmm.
And we would go on a Saturday and take our clothes. And that laundromat was on the west side of that Main Street. What's that, Main Street?
Main Street.
Okay, it was on the west. Kind of on the north end. It was a little old building out there that had a laundromat, was a laundromat. And we would go up there and wash them. And it seems like we would dry them, too, there. And I had tried to learn to sew. Mom sewed a lot, quilted a lot. But in those days, she got the bead sacks to match. And so I wanted to make peasant blouses, which was elastic around the neck and elastic around the arms. Really simple. So I made one, and we went up there one night, one day, and to do the laundry. And so there was the owner was there, and kind of a middle-aged man, and seems like there were other people there. Anyway, he teased me about the shirt, this blouse that I had on, and I said I had made it. And he said ugly things about it. Aunt Nell got upset, And so she said, leave her alone or something, And I know I went out and cried about this blouse that I thought was so beautiful, and obviously it wasn't.
He had his nerve.
He did. Mm-hmm. And you said, leave her alone. There's nothing wrong with it. Anyway, we went to the laundromat a few times, but Dad didn't want us to go. He didn't like the idea of going to the laundromat. I don't remember what the problem was, but he didn't like it. So he didn't want Mom to go anymore. And it probably cost a quarter, to wash the laundry. Probably that was the problem. Anyway.
That probably was.
Yeah, probably was. After that, I don't remember going. It seems like I was barefooted. It was in the summer, and it was hot. But I know we did go up there. That little, it wasn't laundromat. It was washateria.
Washateria.
But that's...
Well, there was a washateria here.
Was there?
That Mama took me to when I was very young, but it was just right up here on the other side of the store.
Uh-huh.
Right up in there between the barber shop and the... And it was an ugly, concrete-looking cinder block type building.
Uh-huh.
Rock building. Uh-huh. And it stood there. Oh, God, it stayed there. I can remember being inside it. It was very dark, and it had rows of washing machines. That's all it was. And I remember the water just ran out the back into the
crate. Right out the back.
And it seemed like the TV's on it or ran it or something.
Yeah, I believe so.
But she'd go up there and use it and pull the wash in my little red wagon.
Yeah.
So I was very young when I go up there. And then the building closed, and it stayed there for a long time, probably until the early 60s, maybe, or late 50s at the most. But you don't remember that.
No. So you were, that was after we left, you know.
Yeah.
Now, one of my friends was at school was Daisy Phillips.
Yes.
And she had a younger brother named, that was in the place with
younger
you.
Younger brother.
She had a younger brother.
That was in place with me?
Uh-huh.
Well, Clay. But
Clay.
But
yeah.
Clay, no. Daisy was not Clay's sister.
Oh, he wasn't?
No.
Clay
and Dawn were Betty Phillips's.
Betty and that's right.
David Phillips. And their parents, or his parents, had been here forever.
Now, David was
Betty's husband, but his father was P.A. Phillips. P.A. Phillips. And he helped build the Baptist church.
Well, isn't David, how old is he?
Well, David and Betty would be Mama's age. Close.
So, no.
But I know Daisy Phillips. She was...
She had a sister?
Daisy Phillips must have been maybe David's sister or something. I don't know.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. That would be about the right age. But I've heard her name.
Uh-huh. See, they lived... what's that street that runs right off?
Yeah.
They lived in a little
house.
A little bitty house.
So that must have been P.A. Phillips.
Uh-huh.
That would be David's father.
Mm-hmm.
And I bet that's his sister.
Uh-huh.
I bet Daisy's his sister. I don't know, but I've heard the name. Because the Phillipses have been around here since probably the 1900s.
Really?
Or 1920s or something. He was a big Baptist, all of them are still. And he helped build the Baptist church that's still up there. You know, built it pretty much single-handedly, I think, or something. But that was P.A. Phillips.
Yeah, I knew they went to the Baptist church.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She was very smart. She was like valedictorian, I think, of our class.
Yeah.
Very smart girl. She got married and had two children.
Yeah.
I think they lived in Carrollton the last time. I don't know how. I heard from her through 8 Neil years ago when my kids were little.
Yeah.
I got a letter from her.
Let's see if there's anything else we should cover about.
Okay, let me
look. Look at your notes.
All right. Oh, some of these are pretty hot. Okay, at school,
you
we had...
some
light. Well, no, it's fine. We had vaccinations, you know, that want to vaccinate you at school.
Uh-huh.
Well, I had the smallpox, but I was always afraid of that needle because, you know, you could see. You could see them do it.
Mm-hmm.
So when it came around for my turn, you know, my class's turn, they gave you a form to take home. Your parents had to sign. Well, I would take the form home, but my grandparents, I said, I don't want to take this up. They said, that's fine. You know, I mean, you know, they didn't care. So I never had another shot. I had smallpox. But nearly everybody else lined up and got those other shots. I can't remember what they were, but they got them. Probably, what, whooping cough?
No, I don't think so.
When I was in school, it was polio shots, but that was long after your time.
Yeah, see, we didn't have polio.
Yeah.
I didn't take polio until I was 26, and I took the sugar. It was on the sugar thing, cube.
Oh, when the sugar cube came along, I was in heaven, because we didn't have to take those shots at school.
Yeah.
And I hated it. I was like you, I hated the needle.
I did, too.
Oh, it never hurt me. But it passed
the dread.
Just the dread.
Uh-huh.
And of course, at school, you had to look brave. And we'd line up, and they'd give them, you'd take like three of them or something. And then they came out with the sugar cube, and it was glorious.
I know.
And I remember taking sugar cubes in school. I still remember that.
Uh-huh. I did, too.
What else you got in there?
Oh, well, let me look at something else. Oh, my teeth. That's another thing. You know, we didn't go to the doctor, and we didn't go to the dentist. Well, my teeth, my top teeth were crooked. And so my mother decided that I need to have braces put on my teeth. Another one of her bad ideas. So she comes out, and she takes me to where she lived, which was in Fort Worth. And we see a dentist, and he puts these wires back in on my back teeth to separate them so that he could put, I guess, some sort of orthodontic thing in there. So they twist these wires real tight in here in my molars. Well, this was supposed to be like for about 3 or 4 weeks to make space for these braces. So in the meantime, she decides that she can't afford braces, and so that idea goes out the window. And I am left with these wires in my mouth. And after about 6 months, they're beginning to rot. You know, they're beginning to get sticky, that they're coming and sticking out, you know. But they don't come out. I can't get them out. Anyway, those wires stayed in there until they literally rotted out of my teeth.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Until I could get them out of my teeth. That was one of my memories about my mother, along with some others. Let's see here. okay, on the farm over here, when you went, there was a creek on the farm.
Mm-hmm.
And it had really deep sides and a lot of white rock.
Mm-hmm.
And it was south of the bridge, you know, south of the road there,
mm-hmm.
back pretty far. We had a lot of pecan trees. We always picked up a lot of pecans. We'd go and do that every, Aunt Nell and I would do it too. We'd pick up pecans. But on that bank, they discovered dinosaur bones. And Whittington comes out, and he is so excited and so thrilled. So he contacts, I guess, a museum.
Mm-hmm.
And those bones were removed, you know, and taken to a museum. Well, that was the highlight of the day, you know, to think that a dinosaur had been there. That was really something. Really interesting.
I think there was an article in the Dallas News about that.
There was.
Herald. I've never seen it one time.
Uh-huh.
And they said for a long time the bones were on display at
the
Dallas Museum. Whatever, natural history or something, I don't know.
I heard that there was an article too, but I never saw it.
Do you remember who discovered them?
Hmm?
Do you remember who discovered the bones?
No. Somebody in the family did. It was obvious that we didn't know at first it was dinosaur bones, but you could see from that, it's like a cliff that came down, you know, and as that brittle shale or whatever, those rocks, as that deteriorated and came off, you could see the indention of the bones, the bones sticking out. And I don't know who discovered it, but I do remember seeing it. And I remember they came out and you know, excavated it and took them away.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't remember the year exactly. I know I was old enough to remember, you know, seeing them do it. Okay, let's see. Dewan would come out on the weekend. This was her favorite activity.
Mm-hmm.
Was to bring her friends to the farm because they lived in town, and this was really a highlight of her life, was to bring these young girlfriends her age out to the farm.
Mm-hmm.
Come out on Sunday, eat, and, you know,
eat mainly,
yeah, and then look around the farm, you know, take back pecans or butter, and we churn butter in a big churn, you know, with a thing, what do you call that thing in the center?
The dash.
Yes, thank you. A dash. And we churned that, you know, a lot of butter. Because we had a separator. We'd separate the milk from the cream, and then we'd churn it. And so we had butter and eggs, and we had pecans. And they would come out, eat, and take away samples of our goodies from the farm. That was her favorite thing. Her other favorite thing was she would bring things to us. And Mom would say, being wise person she was, "Honey, don't put that on the shelf. Just leave it in that sack because she'll be back." She was what we label the Indian giver. She would bring towels 1 week and she would come and get them for me. She would bring things when she had her girlfriends, you know, and come back and get it when she didn't have her girlfriends with her. We would get so tickled about, you know.
I've forgotten that.
And a lot of the things she brought, she got from off of Henry's truck. You know, things that were, what, lost or?
Lost.
And so she would bring them out. And one time she brought me a pair of riding boots. They weren't my size, but I clomped around in them, you know, and she didn't want those. One time she brought a little wagon, and I was too old for a wagon, but, you know, it sat around. But mainly she would bring household things. And then she, in a few weeks, boy, she'd be back to get it. Like bath mats, bath towels, and other curtains or sheets. And boy, she'd come back and get it. We'd just die laughing. Oh, here she comes. Get that sack out, you know.
Before you go any further, talk to me about Aunt Boone. Well, I'll tell you the story on Aunt Dude. I, 2 or 3 years before she died, I had it in the back of my mind that I ought to sit down with her like this
right.
and record her and get her to just be honest with me and tell me everything about Uncle Henry.
Uh-huh.
And I never did do it. But I guess we probably know everything about Aunt Dude, but I think this is such a major thing in our family history that we ought to have it down.
Yeah.
You know, I hear that she met Henry English when she was like 17 or something.
Yeah.
But what all do you know about all that?
Well, no, see, I don't know exactly the correct dates and everything about when she met him. I really don't
know.
Really
what have you heard about it?
What have I heard? Okay. Some of it I got firsthand from her about her involvement with him.
Yeah.
And some of it was, well, my mother came, and this was after I was married. And right after we married, I think my mother came and stayed with her for a while. And we saw both of them. And so at that particular time, she wanted my mother to get involved with a man like she was doing. You know,
mm-hmm.
and of course that didn't work out because my mother didn't want to do that. She was living in West Texas, and was doing nails or hair, working for people. I don't know, but she was living in San Angelo. But she would come home, you know, occasionally and stay with Dude, and Dude wanted her to, you know, get a sugar daddy like she had to keep her up.
Mm-hmm.
But my mother wouldn't go for that. But anyway. She had that little house. The first house that she had was down in Old Town, which I can't remember the exact location, but it was East Dallas.
Wasn't it, did she live at Love Field, near Love Field?
No, I don't think it was Love Field. It was, and I've heard the street before. I've heard it since, and I can't remember. It was where that old theater was, that old theater, it was in northeast Dallas.
The Granada or the...
Like the Granada. Was it Granada?
I don't know. The earliest I heard is that she had a house near Love Field and then moved to the one on La Vista, which I remember.
Oh, well, maybe it was Love Field then. Maybe so. Because
it
was where she went to La Vista. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I went to that house several times, and that's when my mother was there, you know, staying with her for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And she was working at... A. Harris,
mm-hmm.
you know, doing monogramming, and it was a small little house. It was kind of like this house, a little small, nice neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
and he had bought it for her and a car, and she had a mink coat. She had all the trappings, you know, of a kept woman.
Mm-hmm.
He was married, of course, and she went on vacations with him. She went to the Bahamas. She went to Nassau. She went to some other places. I can't remember in that area. Not Jamaica, but I know she went to the Bahamas. And sometimes she would spend the night with him somewhere because Mom and I and Dad, we were supposed to go down and visit or something. It was when I was in high school. We were supposed to go down there and pick up something or do something. We got there that morning about 10 o'clock, and she wasn't there at that little house. So my grandfather said, well, we'll just have to wait. So he pulled up in the driveway, and we sat out there in the truck, you know, and waited. And finally she came, she had a cab came and dropped her off, and she was all dressed up. And so she was very evasive about where she'd been and what she'd been doing. Said she'd been with spent the night with a friend, is what she said. And so I remember that whatever the transaction was, we got the package or we did something and we went back home. Now, she would come out to the house and she would mention his name, but not very often. But she would mention him, you know.
But the family always seemed to know.
They always knew that he was married, that he was keeping her up, he was giving her money.
He was rich.
Very.
They knew who he was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He owned Red Ball Motor Freight.
Yeah.
And then she did go from that little house to La Vista, mm-hmm. and she was still working, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, this was a much more expensive house. She always had a new car. She'd come out in her car. She did have liquor in the trunk, you know. She would go out to the car, and I don't know if she took a nip or what, but anyway, we knew that she had liquor in it. She always had nice clothes, real nice things. Now, she never did give Mom and Dad any money that I remember.
No, I don't.
And never gave me a consent to rub together. As a matter of fact, she didn't like girls.
She didn't like me.
Janice always said she didn't like
it. No, she didn't like girls. She liked little boys, or she liked, you know, grown men.
Yeah.
But she never did like girls, and she didn't like my girls either. Now, I never did anything to her. I never said anything. I was very quiet as a child. As a matter of fact, I probably was withdrawn. And whenever she would come to, when she would get around me, she would say things like, you know what? You have a, wait a minute, I'll think of what she, the words, what you have is an inferiority complex. That was her favorite phrase for me.
She didn't know what it meant.
No, she didn't, and I didn't either. And you know what? I really didn't care.
Well, so in all this time, she was with Henry English, and did you ever see him?
No.
You never saw him?
Never saw him, never laid eyes on him. Now, when he passed away, she claimed that she had a written statement that he was in his will, that he was going to leave her X number of dollars, and that he, something else, I forget what all. Anyway, she waited too long to file the lawsuit against, you know, this, to take it to court. I have the article at home.
Yeah.
I'll have to send you the copy,
because
it's very interesting.
Yeah.
So her time, her legal time ran out, and so her lawsuit, the suit was not honored. I mean, she didn't get anything from them. Now, when Aunt Nell was going down there, and Mom, they went down there to help her with her monogramming.
Mm-hmm.
And while they were there, they tried to serve her with papers, which was alienation of affection. His wife brought this lawsuit against her.
Mm-hmm.
But she wouldn't go to the door. She told them not to go to the door, too, because,
mm-hmm.
you know, you have to take
served.
It in
mm-hmm.
your hand to be served. So she avoided that little piece of paper, and I don't know whatever became, I suppose nothing ever became of it, you know, but she didn't receive anything after he died, like she thought she was going to,
mm-hmm.
but anyway, but I have that newspaper article, it came out in the Dallas Morning News, and I'll have to get,
yeah,
you want a copy
sure,
of it?
Sure, I love it.
Yeah.
I did see Henry English.
You did.
She's familiar to me more than once, but the time I remember most clearly, it's one of my stories. I don't know how young I was pretty young, but Bill, my brother, I seem to remember he was there too, but he may not have been, but I think he was. And it was in the hospital for something. I don't know what. One major, but
uh-huh.
She was in the hospital in Dallas, and we went to visit her. Mom and Dad, me, and I think Debbie. And we were down there in her hospital room. And you know, when she lived on La Vista,
uh-huh.
and we would go, when I'd go visit
yeah.
her, I was fascinated, of course, with the telephone. She had a red telephone.
Yes.
And of course, unlike Cobell, you'd pick it up and there'd be a dial tone. And
right.
You could actually dial the number and get the time, a recording,
yeah.
and
right.
I was fascinated
uh-huh.
with that. And she would let me dial that phone
uh-huh.
a few times, but then she'd say, no, you can't do it anymore because Henry might be trying to call.
That's right. Yeah.
And so, anyway, I remember that. And then we were at the hospital then, and he called because he always called for
uh-huh.
And he called, and I remember her being on the phone, and she was saying, yeah, come on over and visit the Wheatus and Ruby. Now, he knew us.
He did.
Yeah. And she said, Wheatus and Ruby Nell are here visiting. Come on over. So, okay, so about, I don't know, 20 minutes later, he shows up. And I don't remember when I saw the man other than this one time. But I do remember that the times I ever saw him, he had a man with him.
Really?
He never traveled alone.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if it was his chauffeur
uh-huh.
or just an assistant. I got the idea he was some kind of assistant,
uh-huh.
a guy.
Uh-huh.
And these two guys came in, and I remember he was a large man.
Yeah.
I seem to remember he was a large man, very friendly, very
uh-huh.
kind, very nice. He came in and was very jovial. And when he heard over the phone that we were there, he stopped at a 7-Eleven and thought he had to bring his presents.
Uh-huh.
And I can remember he came in and said, here, take whatever you want. And what could you get at a 7-Eleven at night?
Yeah.
You know? I remember one of the things I remember clearly was a thermos jug.
Really?
And, you know, it was things like a thermos jug and stuff like that that he got at 7-Eleven to give to me and my brother. And we were just, because nobody spent money, first of all, nobody spent money like that. Just walk into a store and say, give me that. And then bring it to somebody and say, here, that you didn't know very well. That's what I remember about.
Uh-huh.
And he never stayed long. He brought her flowers.
He did.
And then he was there for some amount of time, or maybe we left, I don't
uh-huh.
know. And then he was gone. And then the only other time I remember, this would have been in the 60s because I was probably a freshman or sophomore,
uh-huh.
62, 63.
Uh-huh.
And dude comes out and says, called us first, and said, we're going to go, it was in the summer, said, bring your bathing suits, we're going to go swimming.
Uh-huh.
And she drove Mama and me and my brother, I guess Janice, yeah, the three of us, Dad was at work for us, to a house in Dallas on Inwood Road that Henry English owned. He didn't live there,
uh-huh.
but he owned it. Nobody was living there.
Uh-huh.
And I remember we thought it was a mansion. These days it would probably look like, you know, a brick house.
Yeah,
it was fancy for its time. It had a swimming pool,
uh-huh.
and I remember it was on Inwood Road. And she had a key, and she went in, and we looked around the kitchen. I remember it was a very fancy kitchen, very similar to what you see today,
mm-hmm.
you know, with the Vanna hood and a kind of a granite thing in the middle, and,
uh-huh.
you know.
And
a swimming pool. We were just, you know.
Yeah.
And we went swimming and then came back, and there was something else I remember.
Uh-huh. I wonder whose house it was.
I'm sure it was his that he just owned.
Mm-hmm.
For an investment, or who knows why.
Right.
But it was his.
Well, a couple of years ago, I noticed in the Dallas paper that one of his relatives died. It had to have been like a son or grandson.
I heard he had a grandson who had, was
I think
mentally,
that
he was off.
Oh, really?
He had to be cared for all his life. And then Henry left him a trust fund.
I believe this was a woman.
Really?
I think I'm almost certain. I don't know if I cut it out or not, but I cut some obituaries out to unsave them. But I remember that the mention of the relatives, because one of his sons was initials.
Yeah.
Was it AJ?
I don't know, HR?
It was initials, and those initials were in that obituary of this woman. I can't remember the exact lineage of how she fitted in, but I do remember those initials because dude used to say that all the time, and it was his son.
Well, I always heard that his family, that his wife, I heard he was married twice.
He was.
And he always told Aunt Dude that he couldn't get a divorce.
Right.
But
But he did. Yeah. And when he got the divorce and he didn't marry her, she became very angry, but he married another woman.
Yeah. But I always heard that the sons, always the family, and even the wife, knew about Aunt Dude. Maybe they didn't know who she was.
Right.
But knew about her.
That's right.
And that there was always great division there. And that he was always careful.
Yeah, I remember that too. Yeah. Because the reason I remember was didn't one of the boys own a car dealership, and she would go and get the car there? Because she would talk about this son of his that had this these initials.
Really?
And I think it was like AJ or H something.
I seem to remember that too.
Yeah. It was.
A story I heard, was this from Michael James? Maybe. Was that he told me that the family did know about it. But I seem to remember they always
did.
It's because of the controversy.
Uh-huh.
And he lived on Beverly Drive for a while. I can remember driving by his house, big mansion on Beverly Drive, down there off of Lemon and whatnot. But what was the story I was fixing to tell? It had to be Jane. He said that Ina Faye and Aunt Dude were flapper girls, you know, wild.
Yeah.
And that granddad was always on her case.
Oh, yes.
That they were wild, and he seemed to think they were both guilty.
Yeah, I think they were too.
And he said that she met him when she was working in a department store.
And he walked in. I think that's right.
And that's what the story is.
Well, you know that picture of her? That's a studio picture of her in that bed. I brought.
Is it? Yeah.
Uh-huh, that's a studio picture.
Yeah.
And she was very young, but dude's fingernails.
Oh, yes. She was young.
I heard she met him when she was 17.
Uh-huh.
I don't remember.
Well, you know, she and my mother, Johnny wouldn't even, they wouldn't go to school.
Yeah.
They just quit school. Yeah. They wouldn't go.
She quit school and
and
was wild and I guess in Dallas.
Yeah.
And
Well, you know, we don't know how many abortions she had by him, but we know she had one.
Do you really? No, I hadn't heard that.
She had it right here in this house.
You're kidding.
No.
In this house?
Yes. She sure did.
I hadn't gotten it.
Mama never told us that.
Well, she told me.
I hadn't gotten it.
She called right now, she got worried. She called 8 Nails.
I don't know if she told me or not.
Yes, she did.
Well,
she told you when we spoke. She called and she said she was sick and she wanted to come out because 8 Nails told me. And she said, what's the matter? And she wouldn't say on the phone. She said she was afraid. She came out. She was bleeding. And she stayed. I know she stayed overnight. And
well, it might be more longer than that.
Uh-huh. And it might have been 2 days, but she decided to go back home and go to the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
She had an abortion, one that we know of, but I don't know how many others.
So when she came here, she'd already had the abortion?
Uh-huh, and she was bleeding.
She was having trouble.
Yeah.
Came here. So she didn't have the abortion in this house. But
no, but she, yeah, well,
she
okay,
was here
I'm
after.
Sorry.
Yeah. She was here after.
Yeah, she was here, yeah. She had problems.
Tell me about Uncle Johnny.
Uh-huh.
Mama says that Johnny was always popular, a ladies' man.
Oh, mercy.
And,
beware of the neighbors.
Never heard any of that story.
Oh, dear. When we lived at Bloomdale, this was told. The curtain never came down on the Johnny. Uh-huh. The curtain was always up. He had a sexual relationship with the woman across the road from at Bloomdale. And she was married, and her name was...
I can't think. She saved my life.
I'll think of it. She didn't have any they didn't have any children.
No.
She fell for him, like a ton of
bricks. Was awful.
And he carried on with her, hopefully, unbeknownst to the husband.
And this was, how old was he?
Well, you know, I was 4, and so I don't know his age, but I know that I was 4 when we lived at Bloomdale. And I don't remember much about it other than I ran into the washing machine out on the porch one night and hit my shin real bad and left a scar. And they always, and I do remember that. I remember they washed their feet at night in buckets of water. The men, you know, would wash their feet because they were tired. and dirty. And I would carry some water and fill it, and I ran into the washing machine and hit my shin. But so I know that I was four when we lived there, and then with five we lived, went to Princeton. But he was, I don't know, how old is he right now? Do you know?
How much older is Johnny?
I don't remember his age. My mother was born in, 12 or 14?
Yeah, 14.
And he's 14, and he's younger. You know, he's the
youngest. Yeah, he's the youngest.
So if he was born, if she was born in 1914, he's probably born in 1916.
Maybe.
Okay.
So he's old.
So if he was born in 1916, and you were born?
In 36.
So he's 20 years older than you are.
Older.
So he would have been about 24.
He would have.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's right. So he was carrying on with the woman across the street.
And I remember they would go to the barn. Now, I remember that tale, that they would go to the barn, our barn, you know, because she was right across the road.
Grace Wright.
That's right.
And the family knew about this?
And do you know that whenever they got older, Mom, because Aunt Nell would tell me that Mom got, they saw her. Her husband was dead, and Mom saw her somewhere years later, you know, maybe while we were living in McKinney.
Yeah, probably.
She asked about him. She never forgot him.
Well, did she have a baby, Bonnie?
No, she never had any children, ever.
If she did, she had.
Her husband didn't have any children either, but I don't think she ever had any. So he was carrying on with her for a long time. That didn't mean she wasn't pregnant. No, it didn't, but probably not. Let's see, then when he went with service, he had a relationship with a German lady.
I'd forgotten that.
She had a child by him, she had a boy. And when he came home, I remember we were living over here. When he came home from the service, well, he had been writing to Mom and sending money and said, could you send some clothing? And Mom would go get it up Grapevine, and we would mail it in a box, mainly around Christmas, because the child was, you know, younger than I, a lot younger than I, but not a baby.
And this was, one was in Germany?
Well, actually,
he was in
Italy. But it seems like I remember the woman was German. But it could have been an Italian. But see, he was at Salerno, which is in Italy. And but not for the whole war. But he was injured at Salerno on the beach. He got shot in the, was it in the leg? I believe it was in the leg. He was injured. But we sent, Mom would send blue jeans, things, clothing. And then when he came home, he wanted more clothes, he'd buy clothing. And I always remembered, oh, I wish I had a pair of blue jeans. Here was all these clothing would go to this child.
I've forgotten that.
And then, let's see, when he met Esteline, well, when he came home from the service, he was pretty shell-shocked, you know. He had post-traumatic syndrome, I suppose, because he couldn't sleep. And over here at this house, he would sleep in that front bedroom, but he would have nightmares so bad, he would get up and get on the front porch, and he would sit out there the rest of the night, or lay down out there. And he would scream, you know, at night. I remember he brought home, I had that in my notes. He brought home acetaminophen, which was aspirin, that they gave them these bottles of aspirin. And we didn't have a lot of medications. But, boy, when we found out that was aspirin, we were so happy because at that time, when you went to buy St. Joseph aspirin. You bought a little tin that might have had 10 or 12 in it for a dime, but you know, that was expensive for us. And he had bottles. He had big bottles of aspirin, and we were just in heaven because Mom put them up in the bathroom, you know, to save them. But he was taking those aspirin and probably other things. But he had a lot of pain from the service on his leg, and then, you know, fighting at night. In his dreams, he was still fighting the war because he got off of the boat just like you've seen in the movies where the boat didn't go all the way to the edge and they had to run from the boat to the land through the water. And when they did, they were looking right in the face of the enemy. And so they were all mowed down. And he was shot and then came home, you know, after that. But he didn't seem to be just exactly himself. To me, I remember he was kind of withdrawn. He didn't seem to be himself for a while, you know. He was mope around and not say much. But he always was kind of a quiet person. But I do remember I was old enough that he had a car. He got a car. And I remember that I went places with him in that car. But he was always real quiet. And
active. He was by nature quiet.
He was by nature quiet. Yes, he was. But then he met in Fort Worth somewhere. He met Estelle. I don't know where. I'm going to get some water.
He went with a lot of girls.
Yeah, he went with a lot of girls. I don't know. But let me look at
this. This is disc number three with Pat.
I got something else to tell you about when the war was going on. We had Johnny and we had Felix in the service at the same time. And they sent, or we bought, I'm not sure, pillows that were silk. And I know you've seen them. That had something about the service. You know, it was 1942. It had something on, it was silk, and had fringe. Have you ever seen those?
Well, I've seen silk pillows. I don't know.
And they were real popular. You know, everybody bought one of these pillows that was commemorative of the war.
Yeah.
You put them on the sofa. That. And then we had a sticker, or like a sign that we put in the window that said, our boys are in the service, something like that. There was a sign that we put on the window, on the front window of the house during the time of the war. I thought that was so interesting. But I've seen those pillows in like antique stores, you know. Of course, they look bad because they're kind of rotted. But that was popular. Let me look at my notes now. When I wanted to learn to sew, Mom sewed quite a bit. We had pajamas that were homemade, and I think I had one pair of pajamas all the time. I was a teenager. You know, you didn't get many clothes. But Mom sewed quite a bit. But Aunt Nell bought me one Christmas a doll that you could sew its clothes. It came with instructions, and it was so high, you know, about that tall. And I had that thing for years, and I made all kinds of clothes for that doll. That's really how I learned to sew.
I'm sorry to say,
patterns. Mm-hmm. It had patterns. I thought that was.
Have you still got that doll?
No, I don't.
No, I do.
I wish I did. Oh, that would be something. Oh, we didn't have any toys, and I didn't have any close relatives my age until you came along. It wasn't much for entertainment, and I know I had a squirrel we kept in a cage in the winter, and it died, but it was, I'm sure, miserable, and it was in a bird cage, but I remember feeding that little old squirrel, and then we got up one morning, it was dead, probably froze to death, but outside that house on the west side where there was chinaberry trees, I would make mud pies and then decorate them, you know, like with the peas and the leaves and everything. That was my favorite pastime, was to make mud pies. My pies probably still taste like mud. Oh, let me see. I had to help do the dishes, and I shelled corn on the corn sheller. And I know you've seen those. It's a round thing. You hook on the bucket, and you put the corn down.
There used to be one in Granddad's barn in the kitchen.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So interesting. And I had to water. We had canna beds all around that house. At one time, there were quite a few cannas, you know, big, great big ones out by the fence. And I had to water those with a hose. And let's see. That's about it. I know a horror story. Potatoes were stored under that house.
Yeah.
Oh, and I had to go and get the potatoes out.
Was it under the house or the barn?
The house on the east, on the west side of the house. There was an opening, and that house, of course, was on piers, you know.
Yeah.
And they would put lime on those potatoes, you know, to keep them from rotting. But you'd have to crawl under there and get the potatoes out. In the summer, there would be dirt daubers and wasps nests on those wood. Oh, and it just scared me out of my wits. And I guess I had to crawl under them because I was the smallest person. Anyway, I learned to take a hoe and or a stick and drag the potatoes.
And drag them out.
Oh, to this day, I can't stand a wasp. I hate those things. But we put a lot of, they put a lot of potatoes and onions under that house.
Yeah.
And keep
it kept that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Mm. So I guess that's about it.
We
had a lot of cats. We always had cats. And I got ringworm from them, you know. I don't know how I got rid of it because we never had any medicine. But we did have one bottle of medicine that cured it all, and it was called IPA ointment. And it cured everything, remember?
Blue or something.
Gray. It was gray coat, ugly. But you put that on anything, and and you would be cured. And I also had impetigo real bad once, which is a nasty disease. But ringworm, I played with those cats all the time, and I just covered ringworm. I'm sure I was a hen. Don't you know the teachers hated that? Oh, my gosh. Let's see. I think that's about
it.
Well,
we were talking about Uncle Johnny. Did we finish?
About Uncle Johnny. I never, after he married Esteline and they lived in Fort Worth, he stole that wood and stuff from the base. Because Lena used to go with him over there and help him build that house. And he went over on Saturdays and stole that wood from the base. And other stuff, too. But anyway, I never did know.
That.
Yeah, we went over there, remember? We just went to help him build that house.
I remember a house in Fort Worth.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's the one you're talking about.
Yeah, it is, I'm sure.
You know, he had a bunch of kids, and I can remember going over there. They were the poor relations.
He had four,
really
didn't he?
Poor.
Yeah, they were.
And, you know, and I remember Mama Gail was warning me. I don't know if I think I liked playing with them. It wasn't like my relatives on Gas side. I didn't like those cousins. I didn't like Don and Bob until I was an adult.
Yeah.
Now
They're
more they were the more normal people. But in those days, they didn't like me, and they were country, and I was, you know. But I remember Uncle Johnny's kids were just about as poor. They were just barefoot poor.
They were.
You know, and the house inside wasn't bad, but outside it was a really trashy.
It was barren outside.
Did they
barren.
Make that house? Build that house?
Uh-huh. We just helped him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He had an old trailer and a truck, and he would go on Saturday or sometime, he'd go to that base. Of course, it was just junk. You know, it was junk wood stuff. Yeah. But he would carry that wood off and all that stuff off and bring it home, and they put that house almost totally together with the supplies and stuff he got at that base. But Wheelis helped him do it. It wasn't a very big house.
No, if it's one I was thinking of, though, it seemed old-fashioned. It seemed like it had been built a long time ago. It was had a living room, and I remember it had a couple of bedrooms.
Uh-huh. It had a small kitchen and an eating area. We went over there a couple of times, but I really didn't know much about them, you know, after I got grown.
They were kind of to themselves.
They did. They stayed to themselves. Yeah. Now, when I had that Christmas party, he got mad at me about that Christmas, you know, those pictures that we took. Well, I don't know if I, that one of you, I don't know if that's the Christmas party or not. I think that was Janice's, that was a party for Janice. But I had them over for Christmas, Linda and, and Linda and, was it Glow?
Yeah, I guess so.
Mom, you and your family, and anyway,
we had more than one over there.
Huh?
We had more than one.
Yeah, I had more than one.
Thanksgiving or Christmas or something.
Yeah, but this one in particular, one of them, I guess the first time that I called and invited him, I called him, and he said, "Are you inviting Dude?" And I said, "No," and the reason was, when we met up here at Grapevine, she had a big wall-eyed fit. Remember, she caused a problem when we met at Grapevine. And I can't remember exactly. Then when we met, we had a Christmas over here at Mom's. She got mad because we went ahead and ate before Betty and John got there. She had another big fit. Every time we got together, she had a problem. And so I...
Well, she was just like that.
Yeah, she was just
all
like that.
Life.
And he asked me, did I invite her? And I said, no. And he said he wasn't coming either. I said, fine. And I hung the phone up. And that was the end of that conversation.
Yeah.
You know, but that was the way he was.
Well, our family has constantly been
bickering.
Who's mad at whom? Is James
yeah.
or Johnny or
yeah.
Aunt Dude? It was always one of those.
Right.
Mad at
each other. And every time yeah. Dude got around me and my family, she was always mean to us. She was hateful and mean. She was rude to the children, you know. And I never... You know, we never did anything to her.
Yeah.
Never.
Well, she didn't have to.
No. She called me up one time, right after we moved to Grand Prairie, and said, "You want? Can you come over to eat tomorrow?" And I said, "Sure." By the time the conversation developed, by the end of the conversation, she told me she didn't want us to come. And I went, "Oh, okay." And you know, it was just like that. She asked us to go to the circus when the kids were little. Carrie was very small, probably in the second grade. And we'll go to the circus down there at Reunion Arena. So we'll meet you down there. We got down there and sat down. And during intermission, Carrie wanted one of those laser lights. Remember when the laser stick thing was popular? She wanted one of those. So Jess calls a guy over. And boy, that dude, she just gave us her opinion about buying that laser light. It was like, well, isn't it enough if you get to come to the circus? Why do you think you have to have a toy? I mean, she just ate us up one side and down the other.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this child sitting there, you know.
Yeah,
and Jess said, look, you know, it's my child. She'll get whatever I give her. I mean, you know, it's not your decision. And when we got home, on the way home, he said, that's the end of that. We don't have to take her bullshit. That's all there is to it.
That's right.
You know, we don't have to listen to that. These kids don't have to go. She always made fun of Melanie's hair. She said, why don't you get your hair cut off? Your hair is just so long and so ugly. And,
right.
of course,
that's
of course, you know, this is rude and thoughtless. Tasteless.
She knew what she was doing.
Yes, she did. She hated girls, and you know.
She, I was her favorite.
Yeah.
Always was. I just took advantage of it because I loved it. You know, loved her cars. And
oh, yeah.
She'd take me out and buy me clothes at Linda's Penland.
Yeah.
And Neiman Marcus, and she never shopped anywhere but the best.
At the best.
Mm-hmm. She had no use for girls.
Uh-uh.
And she Bill, she didn't treat Bill the same way. And Janice still says that she was. Janice still tells a story about after I was grown that she brought Bill some kind of toy, made a trip out here, a camping set. That's what she said it was.
Uh-huh.
And she said she made a big deal of giving it to Bill, and there was Janice.
Yeah.
And she just ignored her.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And Janice said she felt awful. So
well,
she was a little girl and, you know, just nothing. But that's why she did. And Janice tells funny stories about her coming out in a Cadillac, and Janice was in junior high or something, and they were coming out of basketball practice and said, Mom always came to pick him up. Well, this time it was Aunt Dudy, Mom, Aunt Dudy's car, driving up, and it's a convertible or something. I had the windows open, and Henry Man, Tawny Bennett or somebody, I can't remember who it was, playing stereo real loud.
Yeah.
And it embarrassed her, you know, to no end. And then, oh, Janie said it was wintertime, and she had the top down or something, and and Janet said they had come out of basketball and were all sweaty and freezing to death,
freezing
and that's it, and she wouldn't raise
the top,
because, you know,
she's like her.
And we always told stories about how she came out and had a Cadillac, and she wouldn't let you, you could listen to the radio, but you couldn't push the button to change the stations, because they were preset, and you couldn't mess with them. Speaking of which, all right, now the last thing we need to talk about, Pat, is, okay, you graduated again in 1954, and then what happened? What'd you do then?
I worked in McKinney at a gift shop for about 6 months. I had been working through a plan, you know, DE, distributed education with the school. I worked at this gift shop every day and Saturday for the last semester of my senior year. It was a class that I took. And then after I graduated, I continued there until December, through Christmas. It was just a little gift shop, and I didn't make very much, of course. So I went to Dallas and applied at different places, but I went to the telephone company and applied for a job, and I got a job, but it was at the location on the Mockingbird Lane, which was it was a building that was their supplier of phones and parts and everything. And so I worked there for I take that back. I actually went to work in Oak Cliff at the main building. And I worked there for a short period of time, and I asked for a transfer to the Mockingbird location because that was closer to home. And I was riding with a guy. I would drive sometimes. I had a car, but I would drive, and then I didn't have anybody with me, you know, to share the gas. So there was this guy that I knew that was working downtown at the Statler Hilton, building the Statler Hilton. And so I rode with him for quite a while. And then
what did you do at the telephone company?
At the telephone company, I worked in accounts payable.
It's an office.
It was office.
And where were you living at the time?
With Mom and them.
Here in Coppell, or no, in McKinney.
In McKinney.
So you were going from McKinney to Dallas.
Right.
Every day.
Sometimes I'd ride the bus. Mm-hmm. You know, you could get down at Fairview, you know, at that old store.
Yeah.
I could leave my car there and get on the bus and go in and come back. You know.
Fairview, that little. That was that, the 121?
No.
Crossroads?
It was Frisco Road and the old Highway 5. It was down there on old Highway 5, and the Frisco Road went out to it. It was not 121. Yeah, 121 was north of it. I believe that's right.
121 is the road that we would go on to get there.
Right.
Yeah. To get there.
I think it was on the corner of Frisco Road and Old Highway 5, which was the original coming out of Dallas, you know, the original one.
Yeah.
Anyway, I worked there until 1958, and Jess and I were dating for about 2 years.
Where did you meet Jess?
Pardon?
Where did you meet Jess?
Oh, where did I meet him? When I was working at the gift shop, he was at North Texas, and he was working for the post office delivering packages during the Christmas holiday, and he came around, there was a girl that was one of his schoolmates, Sarah, and she was working with me at the gift shop too, because she was going to go to her, she was married, and she was going to go to France to her husband. He was in the service. And so we were working together, and Jess was delivering packages. And so she hadn't seen him in a while, you know, since they'd been out of school. So they struck up a conversation, and So, anyway, see, he's 6 years older than us.
Mm-hmm.
But, anyway, I don't know. She said to me, oh, I want you to meet this guy. I want to get you a date with this guy. And I went, no, I don't think so. He's a lot older. I don't like older guys. And she said, well, he's really a lot of fun. She said, I went to the senior prom with him. I said, oh, okay. So, anyway, one night, she and I are riding around, and we'd been to a movie, and there was a ball game. We went by a park, and there was a ball game. And she said, oh, there's his car. I want to talk to him. And so he comes out, and I'm not real impressed with him, you know. He's with some guy. And so he does come by the shop later, and he wants to know if I want to go to the movie. And he said, do you have a girlfriend? I got a friend, you know, that's going with us. Do you have a girlfriend? I said, sure. So I get Shirley, who's one of my buddies. And so we went to the movie, and, you know, I didn't. Anyway, everywhere we went, he always had a guy with him, and sometimes I'd bring a girl. He always had a guy, somebody from North Texas. One time he had a blind guy with a dog, and we went to the movie, movie uptown. We always went to the movies with somebody, and that's just the way he was. And then finally, he ditched the guys, and we started, you know, seriously dating for about, I think it was about 2.5 years, maybe about 2 years. And he graduated, you know, from North Texas, and I, of course, was working in Dallas. But we got married in 58 in the summer, and he taught 1 year in East Texas, by the way. That year that I was working down there, he was teaching in East Texas. And so he wanted to go to work for Park Davis, which was a pharmaceutical company. He had a science degree, you know, so he thought that'd be good money. Actually, the money was good, but he hated selling. He just hated selling. He hated going in and asking for a sale from these doctors and these, you know, pharmacies. He just hated it. But he actually worked for them for several years. And he had southern Oklahoma and northern Texas. And we had a car furnished. And then we had a lot of freebies. You know, we had his catalog. You could get anything you wanted out of the catalog. And that's how I got all of our Christmas presents and stuff like that, you know, was through the catalog. We traveled. We went to New Orleans to conferences. He went up north to conferences. It was a really nice life. We rubbed shoulders with rich people, you know, in Sherman, because these were doctors and people that had money. But he just got to the point one day where he said, I cannot stand it any longer. I'm going to go back to teaching. And I said, oh, yes, and we'll go back to beans. And we did.
Yeah.
So he got a job. He couldn't get a job in Sherman because not many of the jobs came open. You know.
Now, after you got married, you moved to Sherman?
Uh-huh. We lived in McKinney for several months when we got married in a duplex. And then when that was the summer. That was during the summer. He was actually taking another class at North Texas in the summer. I don't remember why, but he was taking something. And I was still working in Dallas. But that fall, we moved to Sherman. He wanted to go to work for this pharmaceutical company. And so, you know, he did. But anyway, I guess finding a job in that area or around would take time. You had, you know, because people didn't leave their teaching jobs.
Right.
And there were a lot of elderly women that were teaching. They didn't leave theirs. So he looked around, but he didn't find anything. And he looked in McKinney, too. So I don't know how he hooked up. I guess he went to some sort of job fair or I don't know. You know, there was no internet, so I don't know how he found this one in South Texas. But it was high school science, and we moved.
to Orange.
Mm-hmm. 14 years,
you
stayed
in Orange, didn't you?
Yeah. And I really didn't like it. It was called Cancer Center, you know, Cancer Cluster. It was Cancer Cluster City, which meant that due to DuPont and the paper mill and a lot of contaminants, the cancer rate was extremely high. And then, of course, you know, it was very hot and humid.
Mm-hmm.
And I really didn't like the weather. But when we moved here, I don't know. I really, I didn't really want to move. You know how you get kind of comfortable, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to move. It was like, oh, geez, we're going to start over, you know, or whatever. But it was a step up for him, actually, in pay. And then I got a job with the district, too. But the kids liked it. You know, they loved it here.
Mm-hmm.
They really, and of course, I was close to my family, so that made it better. But moving was, like, we had a moving van, and he drove the van and I drove the car. We had sold our house. We sold most of our belongings because we didn't want to bring them. And so we had this moving van. And the kids would rotate riding with him, you know, in the cab, and then get back in the car with me. And so Jennifer got back in the car with me, and she said, Mama, every time Daddy puts on the brakes, all that stuff comes forward. And every time he starts up, all this noise is there. All that furniture is going back. I think I cried all the way here. We didn't do too good packing the truck.
Mm-hmm. Now, just for my interest, tell me about living in Sherman, because that's when I came to visit you in 1959.
Yeah, you did.
I guess I stayed a week.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Yeah.
Why, did Mom and Dad bring you?
Uh-huh. Probably.
You pick me up? I don't know.
No, I think I went and got you.
Mm-hmm.
I think so. Actually, I think you were at Mom's. And,
really?
I think they brought you on a Sunday to Mom's, and I went down to Mom's and got you.
Because I stayed with them for a week for a couple of summers just to visit, to stay
uh-huh.
with them. I enjoyed that, too.
Yeah.
Enjoyed that.
Well, we didn't have much at that duplex. We had a sloping backyard that sloped down, and so we had a small space there where we could get out there. We had a cooker, and we put it on a cardboard box.
Mm-hmm.
I remember he turned the cardboard box over, and we'd cook out there, you know. And we went, you and I, we went places, but I can't remember where all
we
went.
You were working during the day.
Yeah, I had to work at a wholesale company. A food wholesale.
Yeah. And I was there during the day.
Uh-huh.
That's how I got to know the boy who lived next door.
Yes.
He said his name was Pete.
Pete.
Dunham.
Dunham.
But I didn't know anybody else. I do remember the little store.
Yes. Yeah.
I was there several times. And you would come home. I do remember going swimming.
Uh-huh. We went swimming.
At a public pool.
Yeah.
It was unusual.
Uh-huh.
The older pool, as I remember it.
Yeah, it's an old town.
And didn't we go to the lake, too?
Yeah, we went to the lake, and I guess it was Texoma.
I guess so.
Uh-huh. See, I never could swim.
Yeah.
So I didn't get very, you know, I never did get in the water or anything, because I still can't swim. But Jess could swim really, really good.
Yeah.
And you could swim, too.
But I could always swim. I spent half my life in the water.
Yeah.
Jess wasn't there, though.
See, he traveled.
Gone. So he was gone, I think, the whole time I was there.
He left on Monday morning, and he had to work North Texas. And then before he came home on Thursday night, I think it was, he had to work Southern Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
And that was in a week, you know. Mm-hmm. He went every week like that. And that's why that Dunham said that, you know, if I heard something or got scared, I could ring that bell. And
was it Dunham, or was it the guy next to you on the other side of it?
No, it was that Dunham.
Was it Dunham?
Uh-huh, that old man.
Yeah.
Now, the people that lived on the other side of me, there were two or three different occupants of that side of the house, and it was, at one time it was a couple, and they had a couple of children, and then one time it was a couple that had no children, and they got a divorce, and then I don't remember, I think it might have been about three different ones, but we never really knew them very well. But the old man, you know, we knew him.
See, I don't remember ever seeing him. He was always gone.
Yeah.
Too, of course.
Yeah, he's traveling.
He worked downtown. I remember something about
him. Oh, the old man?
Yeah.
He did income tax.
And I remember the boy, not his son.
No.
The boy would talk about the fact sometime he would go down and visit him. But
yeah, he did income tax downtown.
I remember it seemed strange. There was something.
Yeah, they were very strange.
Very strange somehow. And this was on Kessler Street.
Drive.
Kessler Drive in Sherman.
Uh-huh.
And I tried to find the house on there. It's not there anymore.
I know.
But it's interesting because that was a special time in my life, you know, to be staying away from home and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And, I can remember, I think I settled for some of my first comic book subscriptions.
Yeah.
When I was with you.
I think so too.
Because at one time, you know, when I was around the 60s, I had subscribed to tons of them. You know, and I have them still. They're worth a lot of money.
These weren't yours, but I think that I bought them from Jennifer. What's that monkey's name? It was monkeys. What was it? I can't think of the name of that monkey. It was like a boy and a girl monkey. And they're real popular. Yeah, I mean, it was real popular, you know, funny book. And then I've got another one that's something else. I've just got about two, but they're old, real old. I think they were Jennifer's. But Lancelot Link? Is that
right? I heard that name.
I think that was the monkey, Lancelot Link. And it was a man and a woman monkey, you know. Real old. But I don't have much of anything. You know, when we moved there, Christmas was a big deal because Christmas hadn't been a big deal at home. But we had a tree, and I went to Ben Franklin Dime Store in Sherman and bought decorations and things for the tree. I was so happy. And then I had ordered stuff through that catalog. I could get anything. I ordered Mom some silverware, and I ordered his mother, what was it? I can't remember, something. And then Mom always liked hats, and I went and bought a couple of hats, and Jess said, well, go get three hats, because she wore hats to church all the time.
Yeah, that was
And I bought three hats that Christmas, and then I could get nearly anything, like cookware. The catalog was just endless. It was wonderful. And you got it you get it free with points. You know, you sell so much, you get points. And I got a lot of stuff out of that catalog. I really missed that in the car when he turned it in. I was, oh, geez. And I got to tell you about his boss. Harold Pace was his boss there. He had a wife and a son. And he was very, very well off because this man was he was like a high level, not just a salesman, but he was in control of some of the lower ones like Jess. And he was always trying to get Jess to buy a house in the nice end of town. Jess, no, I don't want to do that. But anyway, he became upset with Jess when he decided to quit. You know, he didn't like that idea. And Jess said, well, I'm going to go back to teaching, and I'm going to, you know, go turn the car in Dallas. He just got to where he wouldn't even speak to us. He was so upset about it. So anyway, we moved to Orange, 14 years, come back to, you know, to Grand Prairie, come to Grand Prairie. And guess what? They're living in Grand Prairie. Jess's picture was in the paper all the time, you know. Yeah. His wife was teaching at an elementary school. And, of course, he was still in a manager position with the company, really high level position with Clark Davis. He never spoke to Jess. We never saw him. He never called. His wife never spoke to Jess at the meetings, never said anything. Last fall, we found out that he had 10 years had had Parkinson's, and he committed suicide.
He
committed suicide.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. He got so disabled that he just couldn't stand it. And he put a gun to his head, you know. And so I found out about a couple of weeks ago at the beauty shop, because she goes to the same beauty shop I go to. She retired and several years ago, as a matter of fact, and she moved back to Sherman. That's where they had lived. They were, I guess, from that area. Even though her son's living in Weatherford. But anyway, she moved to Sherman. Well, she told somebody at the beauty shop, she absolutely hated it. She didn't like it there at all. And she was so unhappy, you know, in Sherman. But, you know, of course, the same people are not there.
Yeah.
You know, after 30 years, they're not there.
No, not.
But they told me at the beauty shop that he was had that same personality, that controlling personality in it. He had controlled her and the boy, too. And they had had a, kind of a family fallout over the boy. But they said she'd come to the beauty shop and tell, you know, how overbearing he was. I said, and I had to laugh. I said, oh, my, you know, even back, what was it, 1959, when Jesse, you know, working, or 60, when he was working with him, he was pulling his little, you know, controlling stunts then.
Mm-hmm.
He just couldn't believe that we wouldn't buy a house in a nice end of town and, you know, and stay with the company.
Mm-hmm.
But Jess never was happy. He wasn't happy selling.
Oh, I can imagine. That'd be a horrible thing to have to drive and everything.
Drive all. Every day.
Well, I can't think of anything else.
I can't either.
I think we've covered everything.
I hope.
That's pretty good. Pretty good.
Yeah.
We got some skeletons out of our relatives' closet,
yeah,
Pete.
We did.
Honey, I don't have any skeletons in mind. What
well,
you see is what you get.
I don't think so.
If I had them, I'd tell you, because, you know, I'm pretty open about it.